Hello and welcome to Emacs.L. This is episode 7. I'm your host, Daniel Gopar.
And I'm your co-host, Amin Bandeli.
And today we have Jörgen Schaefer. He's the creator of ElPy and Circa, other Emacs packages that are out there. So, Jörgen, thanks for hopping onto the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We'll just dive right straight into the questions. The first question that I always ask is, how did you get into Emacs?
Good question. I think it was in university, some course we just started doing stuff, and someone said, "Oh, you need to use this program." And I was sitting in front of it. And I was like, "Okay, well, if that's how it works," then I just started using it, and I got stuck in there.
Okay, right on. Did you right away start messing with the configurations, or did you just start using it as is?
Oh, good question. I think they had a pretty big configuration ready for their tooling. I think it was something. I actually don't remember what it was. They had a big configuration for that course, and I just took it, and then I started reading up on that tool because apparently everyone was using it. Think it was actually X Emacs, not GNU Emacs, in the beginning.
I think that was a little bit before my time, but
Roughly 1999.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's a while ago.
All right.
Basically, last century, right? True,
Yeah.
true.
All right, so one question is, what is Emacs? And I mean, not Emacs, ElPy, and why would someone choose to use it?
Oh, well, ElPy is a Python IDE wannabe, I guess. Basically, a tool set that, or a mode, a package for Emacs that you can easily install that gives you comprehensive, sensible Python development environment. And that was initially my goal because when I started developing it, if you wanted to have a Python development environment for Emacs, there were huge blog posts you could follow, and then you have to install that package and that package, and then paste this into your configuration and everything, and it was horrible. So I just started out with a package that would make this installation process easier, and it grew from there.
Okay. All right, sweet. Well, thankful to you, I don't have to go through that painful process that you just described. So, awesome, man. All right.
Yeah, it's great. So, do you want to talk about a little bit about ElPy's features and what sort of like features it offers compared to like an IDE like PyCharm?
That's a difficult question in general, I think, because IDEs, well, the I part, meaning integrated, is a very, very big topic, and I don't think Emacs can actually do everything as well as an IDE can do. It can do other things much better, but the integration part is really hard for Emacs. What ElPy tries to do is to use all sorts of sensible modes that there are out there. For example, company mode is a mode that gives you completion, and ElPy hooks it up with some Python mode or Python libraries that give you completion options and just integrates that. And well, it's there are a whole bunch of nice modes out there that work, and ElPy just puts them together. And I think it's maybe 80% to a good IDE, but if you use PyCharm, there are so many things that just work out of the box a lot easier than on Emacs. It's a bit tricky, but as soon as you want to edit text, it gets annoying.
Right. Cool. Thanks. And so I guess did ElPy start as a sort of like a personal configuration, or was it just from the beginning, did you have this vision of it being as a separate like package?
Well, it started out because I had this stuff copied from a blog post, or multiple blog posts into my configuration. And so this can't be the be all and end all for Python configuration for Emacs. Mm-hmm. I figured I'll extract it into a separate file. And then I thought maybe others want to use that separate file too. And oh, Emacs has this concept of packages. Let's use one of those.
Right.
But I went through a whole iteration of different versions. In the beginning, it used, for example, Pimax. I'm not even sure if that's still around.
Mm-hmm.
That was the old way of doing Python integration with Emacs, and then that was terrible. great idea, but it just was incredibly flaky and difficult to set up. And well, then I rewrote the whole RPC interface, and that's when Alpi started to be more than a separate, than just a collection of modes you would use together. And because I started adding my own code and backends and everything.
So how does Alpi work internally? Is it all, you can go at a high level, is it all ELIST, or is there a little bit of Python thrown in there as well to ease it, or
I'd say probably 50-50 or something, maybe a bit more ELIST by now.
Okay.
It's basically a whole lot of Emacs Lisp, but to talk to Python, to be able to figure out what a sensible completion would be at this point, or what modules are available, or give me documentation for that symbol at this point. You need something that speaks Python, and Python is pretty good at that.
Yeah.
Well, one of the core features or core elements of Alpi is this bridge between Emacs Lisp and Python, so the two parts can talk to each other.
Okay. So one of the things that I also do before I interview is I always ask on Reddit for people if they have some questions. So there were some questions such as, do you have any plans on adding stuff like code generation? I know this is more like, you know, leading into IDEs and stuff, you know, kind of like PyCharm has stuff like this. For example, if you define calling a function in Alpi and Alpi can't find it, would Alpi provide the one option to automatically create a boilerplate function? Or method or whatever. Is that something you've thought about or haven't really dabbled with? Or
I haven't really thought about adding that for Python, primarily because Python is such a dynamic language. I think a lot of people coming from IDEs, especially for languages, highly static languages like Java, they have this expectation that a good IDE knows everything about your program, and they do for if the programming language gives that ability. Like with Java, you really know what kind of variable you have there because it's written right in front of it and after it and around it in a Ruby.
Okay.
With Python, it's more of a heuristic. You guess what you have there.
Yeah.
And the backend says, oh, I don't know what kind of function this is. That can mean, well, that function isn't defined, or, well, I couldn't figure it out. So if you really wanted to have something like automatic code generation, it would be somewhat of a hit or miss.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds pretty much about right. Yeah. So also with the talk about not really being able to find out what exactly type you're dealing with in Python. Hopefully that can be a little bit easier on development on the future when maybe type annotation takes off in Python, or maybe it doesn't. So who knows, maybe type annotations can kind of help that process later on for Alpi or other places. Let's see. Also, another thing, big thing that I also see on GitHub issues a lot on Alpi is the question about whether using to use Rope or Jedi. So, do you have? I'm pretty sure you already have thoughts on that. So, would you mind elaborating?
Oh yeah, that's a tricky. It's a somewhat tricky topic with a lot of history, because Jedi actually isn't that old. In the beginning, there was rope, and that's about it. Pimax, what I was talking about earlier, used rope, and that's what everything started out with. And Alpha used rope in the beginning, and then this Jedi thing came along, and it was the new kid on the block, basically. And figured, okay, there are two libraries. Well, it wouldn't be too difficult to support both, especially if they have some advantage, or used to have some advantages and some disadvantages. Sometimes one did better job, sometimes the other did a better job. And well, so I added Jedi support later.
Okay.
But time went on, and rope is, I think, basically dead as a project. The original authors aren't working on it anymore. And I actually have an issue open on Alpi that says remove rope support. That caused a huge discussion, and some people came up and wanted to revive rope because rope is so awesome, according to them. And they were rewriting it and doing a lot of work, and it was really nice. I mean, there's people that were really, really great people. It was enjoyable to work with them, and they did a lot of work to revive rope, but that more or less died off after a few iterations.
Mm-hmm.
So my current recommendation for everyone is just use Jedi, and if that doesn't work out for you for some reason, because there are still some bugs around, try rope.
Okay. And
if rope at some point just isn't an option anymore in Alpi, well, that's probably when I just didn't want to support two code paths anymore.
Okay. Yeah, the way I'm currently doing things is pretty much Jedi for everything. And if I had to do some type of small or medium-sized refactoring, I go to rope. And yeah, rope has pretty much done a decent job so far. I mean, there's been a couple issues where it didn't catch everything, but I mean, that's what you get. But yeah, is there... I'm sorry, what?
Are you using Python 3?
Yeah, Python 3, yeah.
Oh, that's really surprising, because rope used to have a lot of problems with Python 3. A lot of the Python 3 conversion was done by these people, so that sounds really good.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously at work, there's different projects, you know, Python 2 and Python 3, but as of right now, I'm mostly doing Python 3 stuff.
Awesome. Do that. Yeah. Because I know rope had a lot of problems with that in the past.
Yeah. So let's see. Oh man, I had a question, but I completely went off. Okay. Let's see. Oh, for rope as a refactoring tool, do you have plans on replacing that with something else? Because I mean, I do like rope, and I don't mind it being there since it does help with refactoring.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I wouldn't. At least personally, I will. If it's gonna be taken off, I would like for it to be replaced with something.
I think refactoring is the main reason it's not out yet. I don't think I would completely remove support because of the refactoring. It's just that right now, a lot of features Alpi has, like code completion, documentation for symbol at point, etc., that are not related to refactoring at all, they switch between Jedi and rope depending on what you configure.
Okay.
And I probably would remove the rope path from those and just use Jedi for them, and the part where it does refactoring in, because that just rope Jedi doesn't do refactoring yet.
Mm. Okay.
And there is no other option for refactoring that I know of.
Yeah. I was browsing around, but there doesn't seem that many options. Sadly. Also, another thing that I see also dabbling in the GitHub issues is the question about whether using FlyCheck or FlyMake for the syntax checker. yeah, do you have any comments on that as well?
Yes, use FlyTrack. Alpi, I'm not sure if we added support for FlyTrack by default by now. It's either done or an open issue. I forgot. This was a bit of a longer discussion because the author of FlyTrack refuses to or has reasons, good reasons, I think, to not submit copyright papers to the Free Software Foundation. So FlyTrack can't get into Emacs core. Mm. And for some time in the beginning of Alpi, I wanted to get Alpi into Emacs core, or at least on GNU Helper. Adding or requiring FlyTrack would have been basically the way to say, no, I'm not doing that. So I went with FlyMake in the beginning, and it works. It's okay. It has some issues, but it's okay. FlyTrack is just basically better in everything, in every single respect.
Okay. Hmm. All right. Sweet. Let's see. Yeah, so the next thing would probably be debugging. So as of right now, debugging in Alpi would probably just do meta-x PDB, right? And just start following the stack trace. Okay. Is there a certain package or anything in the future that you're thinking of making that a little bit more pretty, I guess you could say?
I have a confession to make here. I'll make it public.
Okay.
Print debugger. I do not use PDB or any interactive debugger at all.
Oh, awesome.
So every time someone asks me stuff about PDB or the GUID integration in Emacs and everything, I'm like, oh, yeah, right. There was something that I think that works. And so I would love to have good support for that, but as I don't use it, it's really hard for me to figure out what would be a good a good user interface, or how to improve things, or what people actually like.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think something like what's that package? GUIDP or what is it in Emacs? Right, it's built into Emacs. What was the package name?
GUID, Grand Unified Debugger.
Yeah. So I think it splits into multiple windows and shows stacks and variables and stuff like that. I think something like that would be awesome. But I mean, it all depends on taste as well. Just out of curiosity, you just don't like debuggers, or are you infatuated with the print statement? Or
yeah, I was going to ask that as well.
It's a very, very long story. Or not really a long story. It's just a long history. I think it's a self-reinforcing problem. I do switch languages a lot, and every language is slightly different when it comes to debuggers. I do know how to use them, but it's just not something I do constantly or a lot. So I always feel a bit weird and hampered when I try to use an interactive debugger. And it's just something doesn't really click for me.
Okay.
So I don't use them regularly, which means I don't get the experience with it, which means it's somewhat meh to use. So basically, this self-reinforcing. And for a lot of things, I do a lot of server or web server programming. And in a lot of situations, you just don't have an interactive anything there. So just to support a debugger or debugger workflow, you have to put work into this. And well, I just don't. I just use a print. It tells me what's going on there.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. I think I recently just started using for 3 months. I've recently started using debuggers. I mean, before I was just doing print statements as well. But I mean, if you're switching a lot, then yeah, that makes sense. That's interesting though. I'm sorry, what?
I was just saying, I do use, I started using PDB and on Ruby Pry or Bybug. With Ruby, by the way, it's terrible. There are like 15 different things you can use. And you have to figure out which one you want. And with Python, it's awesome. There's this one thing that works. But I use those just to get stack trace at a certain position and print some variables. That's something I started doing, but everything else, like stepping through code and that is just meh.
Yeah, okay. Everybody has their own likes. Yeah. All right, see. Also for AlPy, since it looks like you have a lot of popularity over the years now, which is awesome. So do you have any plans on adding framework support, such as for like Flash, Django, or Pyramid, anything like that built into the core of AlPy, or not really?
I don't have any particular plans. There have been people adding Django support, which is awesome because I use Django.
Okay.
But I don't think I would have set out and said, oh, I need Django support in AlPy. Just never occurred to me that there was something missing there. And I don't use Flask or Pyramid in any project. So same thing with debuggers. I don't have a use. I don't know what would be useful or what people would need to get these supported in any way. If someone adds or makes pull requests, awesome, please do. I'll happily consider them, but nothing I would start in that direction.
Okay. All right. What about something for like pip support, like automatically installing Python packages from within a virtual VM or something like that?
Sounds great. I think I have an open issue with some ideas on that. Like being something I wanted to have in the past was a listing of which packages are outdated. Maybe something that gets the requirements text file, or displays that in a sensible way, or allows updating the version number in there in some way. That would be great. But I don't have like a good idea or a good grasp on what I really would like to have there.
Okay. All right. See. What are some things that you think AlPy is missing or that you would like to see in the future, maybe adding it yourself or seeing it from contributors, making pull requests?
Oh, tons of things. There are issues on AlPy for, I was just checking, 247 issues, and I think most of them are in the backlog milestone because I had this idea, oh, I want to do this, or that would be nice, and then I write it down and forget about it. Or
okay. Backlog and, so just look at the GitHub issues and pick one.
If you want to do something, look there, or actually, much better, if someone wants to help with AlPy, use it, figure out what's annoying you, and fix that.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of open source projects suffer from a helper syndrome kind of mentality. You sit there and try to figure out, oh, someone else, not me, but someone else might need this feature, so I'll add it. And that's a very unagile way of fixing things. Just make things you know you need, because that means you can do them really well.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Also, on that note, how would someone be helpful in AlPy as in becoming like another core developer of AlPy or something like that? Is there like a defined process, or is it just you commit enough that you just give them write access? Or
I think that's how it worked for Cersei, for the IRC client. Someone committed so many things, and so they're, oh damn, I don't want to read all your code anymore. Just have the right access. No, there is no defined process, because it's been my hobby project for, well, I think it's been 5 years soon.
Okay.
And there haven't been that many consistent contributors. There have been awesome people. Really, really thank you to all of you. I try to mention everyone who helps in the release notes. And it's awesome. I have to say this because really one of the best things about maintaining open source software is someone coming along and saying, hey, I use your software. Here's something that makes it better. It's such an awesome feeling in so many ways. It's great. Thanks to all of you.
Yeah.
But well, if someone wants to contribute, make pull requests. I read each and every one of them. Sometimes I take a while. I'm sorry about that, but I read them all. I do give code reviews. Tell people about stuff I like or don't like in the code. And if you really want to do me a favor, split your pull requests into separate ones. So separate one pull request per feature. I think that's normal, but I had issues with that in the past with people putting everything into one pull request, and then it was a bit too much to read, and it took ages.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, that's understandable, yeah. Yeah. All right, well, let's see. One other question that I have is, do you use anything else? Excuse me. Oh, sorry about that. Do you use anything alongside with AlPy to ease your Python development, or do you just strictly rely on AlPy?
Well, I think a development environment includes your editor, Emacs, in particular for me. But there are also lots of things around it. I mean, I do use the Django test server and stuff. But where do you draw the line where something is part of your development process and when it is part of the normal thing you do when you develop
anything? Okay. Yeah.
I don't think I use anything particularly noteworthy or surprising in that regard.
Okay. I just figured I checked. You never know when you learn something new.
Yeah.
I know Amin has some questions about Circuit. Is that how you pronounce it? I don't.
I don't know.
You know, okay.
I heard people, Cersei, I heard that before, Kirke, okay. And depending on whether you're German or English, I think, I also think someone pronounced it as Tilta or Tilke, or it's weird. I think Cersei is the official English pronunciation of that Greek goddess, so maybe use that.
Oh, okay. All right, well,
whatever you want, it's fine. If he doesn't like it, if he turns you into a pig, and it's all fine.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah, I was just kind of curious and ask about like the motivations behind starting it, and for example, how like you would compare it to like something like ERC or RCIRC.
Oh, long history. Oh, a long past. In the past, I used to contribute a lot to ERC.
Yeah.
I also know the author or main maintainer back then, Delicit of ERC. It was a great time. We had a lot of fun. But eventually, I felt that the abstractions in ERC were just getting a bit too annoying. It wasn't a lot of fun to add more features or doing what I tried to do, and it got more and more cumbersome. And then I did what every rookie programmer does when they see a problem. They say, oh, it can't be that hard. I'll just write a new program.
Oh, man. Yes, yeah.
That's how it works, no?
Yeah,
so that's actually how that client was born. And I think it actually started out more or less at the same time as our IRC. I also talked with the author of that one a lot. I don't think it can be said often enough how much the three authors of these, or I'm not sure if it's the author of IRC, but the main maintainer back then of IRC, the author of RCIRC, and myself, we were all sitting on channel Emacs and we were all talking with each other and having different opinions on how to do things. And
yeah,
but we learned so much from each other. It was a fun time.
That's great. Yeah, and I was going to ask about like pros and cons. I think like one of the, I guess, goals of Circe is to have like sensible defaults out of the box. But like other than that, how does it compare to these other two clients?
I think I'm not sure about the defaults of ERC at the moment. Back when I was using it, I haven't used either ERC or RC-IRC in the last 10 years or so. So they might have changed slightly. Last time I looked at them, it was basically ERC can do pretty much everything Circe can do, because some things Circe stole from ERC, some things ERC stole back from Circe, and it was really, really nice. Mutual beneficial development.
Mm-hmm.
But for ERC, you have to configure it all. You have to set it up, every single module, you have to configure it, hook it up, and get it all together, and then it all works. It's nice. But you have to put in this initial effort. And my goal for Circe is that you can get my RC client with my configuration with no configuration work on your side.
Right. Yeah, that's a noble goal.
I have to pick some kind of configuration that I think is sensible, so I just use whatever I like to use. It's
mm-hmm.
personal.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. Sounds good. And is it actively maintained or?
Certainly. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
We do fix bugs. There's an IRC channel, Emacs Circe, on Freenode if you want to. Or have problems, just ask there.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that Vasa is much more active as a contributor to Circe than I am at the moment. He's pretty awesome. He's the guy I was talking earlier about, where who has just contributed so much that I say, here, I have write access. I don't want to read all your code anymore.
True. Interesting. Okay, I also had some questions about Buttercup, which, if I understand correctly, it's for behavior-driven development. And I guess, like, would it be fair to say it's something like Ruby's RSpec or Haskell's HSpec for writing like regression tests or like acceptance testing?
Oh, actually, the stated goal of that project is to be a JavaScript Jasmine for Emacs Lisp. But those are very, very similar, all of them. It's just
mm-hmm.
the way you write down your test or tests, this describe feature, it should do this or it should do that. And I had some kind of epiphany when I used Jasmine for the first time, because this kind of thinking about tests really changed the way I write tests and how I structure them. It was a really great feeling, and I really missed that when I was trying to write tests in Emacs Lisp.
Right. Yeah, I was also going to ask how you would compare it to like ERT, which was, I think, what existed before you started Buttercup.
Yeah, and it's still the main testing framework, I think, ERC. Because it comes with Emacs and it just works.
Right.
There are a few things I don't like about ERT. You can read up on them on the Emacs Buttercup repo readme. Three things mainly. The first one is setup and teardown code. I use that, or like to use that, a lot, because I like to have small tests, and I just want to write 15 two-line tests after each other, and extract most of the teardown and then setup code into some common thing in front of them. And what ERT says about that is, well, it's a Lisp, write a macro, and that is. It's very true. You can do that. It works. But every time I do that, I need to write a new macro. So I could write a macro that just allows me to set to create a setup and teardown code. And I don't know why that isn't in ERT.
Right.
Yeah, and there are a few other things. The ERT is designed to be run interactively, and Buttercup is designed to be run non-interactively, because I think tests should be run in a continuous integration environment. They should also be run locally while development, because I do love TDD, but the main goal for tests should be to run every time you integrate your software. All tests should run, everything should go green, and then okay, things are fine. And ERT makes that hard, and I don't understand that decision either.
Another question is that, is there anything that you feel that we should have asked that we didn't ask you about? Are you gonna be pretty much anything?
You're the podcast people.
There's only so much we can come up with.
I don't think so.
All right, sweet. Yeah, all right. So what's your favorite Emacs package? It can be anything. It can be MetaX, Tetris, or whatever.
Okay, now you have to wait a moment, because I have to think about that. There are so many awesome Emacs packages around that solve little problems on the okay. In this particular situation, this package is awesome. And I really like that. That's part of what I really like about Emacs in general. But for, if I have to pick one for ingenuity, and just because it's aptly named, solves a real problem in a really great way, it's Dump Jump. Do you know Dump Jump?
I don't think I've heard of it.
It's a tool that replaces the meta dot command, you know, where you go to an identifier.
Okay, yeah.
And there are so many attempts to solve this problem. Like Emacs by default comes with the etags or tag support, where you regenerate a tags table every time, and then you can, and then the program will look up the current identifier in that tags table, which works great for languages that have globally unique identifiers, but quickly can degenerate. And you have to regenerate the tags table every time you do something. You save a file, you need to regenerate that, and it's just some maintenance burden.
Yeah,
Alpine goes the other way and integrates with Python. There's a running Python interpreter that just analyzes source code, and I can recommend reading Jedi at some point, because the parser and attempts to interpret Python, the things I said earlier about how it guesses what kind of thing that object under point might be, and then it tries to figure out where that is defined and everything. And there's so much logic, so much work put in there. Jump Jump takes the symbol under point, puts the language specific identifier or function definition syntax around it, and does a grep on the whole project.
Okay.
It's really aptly named. It's completely dumb. It doesn't try to do any particular logic, and it works surprisingly well. And it doesn't matter which language, or whether the mode does have to support for the language, but adding support for a language is pretty trivial. So you just go through 10 different languages in some project and just hit out period, and it goes to the identifier. It's absolutely amazing, I think.
Sweet. Gonna have to check that out, add it as well. All right. So, I mean, we're pretty much at the end. So is there any way, or is there, basically, how how can people get in touch with you if they want to ask some more questions or anything like that?
If it's a question about any of my projects, anything that is related to a particular project, do open a GitHub issue. That's the best way.
Okay.
I do follow up on here that someone opens. And it makes it easier for me to have them in a single point if it's about Alpi in the Alpi repo. If it's not related to any kind of any project of mine, or if it's very, very general and you don't feel like you want to post it on GitHub, I'm fine with questions on GitHub. It doesn't have to be an issue. It can be, hey, I have this configuration problem, something broke, or I want to do this, how do I do that? It's fine, that's great for an issue for me. If it's something very general or you don't want to, then don't want to open an issue for that, you can send me an email. I have a website at jorgenschaefer.de. And there is an email address. You can just send me an email. You can find me on channel Emacs on Freenode. I'm called Forza there. Say hi.
Okay.
Well.
All right. See. So yeah, we'll put all that information in the description in the show notes. So yeah. So thank you, Jorgen, for being on the show. Yeah.
Thank you very much. This was a lot of fun.
All right.
Thanks.
All right. See you. Bye.
Bye.